Thank you, Marlon. Magandang hapon po sa atin lahat. Good afternoon to everyone. It's a very interesting topic that I've been asked to speak about. Actually, the branding of persons and their labeling into words that seem to be prejudicial to them. It's not new. This has been happening for ever since we can remember recorded history. But the dangers involved in calling someone a communist or a communist sympathizer in the Philippines are all too real. We have had too many extrajudicial killings, too many enforced disappearances, and too many cases of torture, which have all started with the belief that communism is evil and communists should be neutralized at any cost. And I think the bottom line of red baiting is really that kind of attitude. Yung ganun ko pong pananaw, na pagka ikaw ay isang komunista, any means, kahit anong gawin sa inyo, pwede. Unfortunately, although millions of pesos have been spent on retraining of the military and the police, I don't think any of that training has really addressed the core issue. That fundamental belief that many of our men in uniform are ingrained in from the very start of their service. I think the retraining must begin in the academies which school the police and the military, and it must be something that fundamentally addresses that psychological attitude. Because the institution itself has already adopted that attitude, and anyone who joins that institution is very likely to just imbibe it or ingest it by some perverse osmosis. It's been 18 years since the anti-subversion law was repealed by Congress. In 1992, under the sponsorship of Senator Rocco, our Congress passed a law saying that it is no longer unlawful to be a member of the Communist Party of the Philippines and even its other organizations, which include the New People's Army. Mere membership, in other words, is not unlawful. It is a part of our freedom of association. Unfortunately, it's been 18 years that also our military establishment, I hate to say it, has refused to accept that reality. And until now, there are members of that establishment or the leaders of that establishment who are calling for the revival of the anti-subversion law 18 years after it has been repealed. But if it were only that, maybe we could live with it. The problem is that the counterinsurgency program of the government has not essentially changed, especially in that fundamental belief that communism is evil and communists should be neutralized, whatever means it takes. And I think that that is really where the root of the problem lies. Up to now, and branding of individuals as communists can take many forms. It can take the form of, like in today's Inquirer, a letter to activists, to anti-mining activists, warning them that they are communists and that if they continue their activities, they will be dealt with accordingly. You have methods like Know Your Enemy. Know Your Enemy is a PowerPoint slide presentation that some members of the military use and go around the country showing who are the enemies of the people. By the way, that includes my organization, the Free Legal Assistance Group. We are listed in that PowerPoint presentation. Of course, we all know the dreaded order of battle. Kahit sino pwede malista dyan, basta medyo mapag-initan ka sa in the eyes of those who are in that establishment. But there are other practices that are equally, and I think also come from the same attitude, which are just as bad. Despite so many administrations, so many different presidents that we've had, these practices continue. And I think these are the practices that we should be addressing. One of them is the use of John Doe cases against human rights defenders, where if you are perceived to be very active in fighting for the rights of the poor and the oppressed, then somehow you find yourself the subject of a warrant of arrest because your name was substituted for a John Doe in a case that happened maybe 15 or 20 years ago. And you have no defense because immediately they bring you to jail, and your first objective, of course, is to get out of jail before you can even think of defending yourself in court. The other practice, which stems from the same fundamental attitude that communism is evil, is the practice that the military has not changed of building up their legal cases on the basis of subversion. As I said, the subversion law was repealed 18 years ago, but just in 2007, I think it was, when I handled the case of the Tagaytay 5, and we went to trial, the prosecution revealed that their only evidence to prove the rebellion charge was subversion. And so we, the defense lawyers, said, well, subversion has already been repealed, so how can that, the evidence of subversion, even assuming it is true, how can that now establish rebellion when what you need is a public uprising, taking up of arms? And on that basis, the judge dismissed the case. But mind you, the five men who were arrested in that case spent more than 800 days in jail on the charge that turned out to have no merit at all after they were arrested and held incommunicado for their first 5 days of detention. Just to finish, I mean, there are many other things I could say, but basically these are the kinds of practices that stem from that belief that communism is evil and should be eradicated at any cost. Until the military and the government in general change that attitude or address the problem, see it as a problem and confront it squarely, I don't think the situation will change. But of course, I don't mean to leave you with a very depressing or bleak situation, which is hopeless, because it's not. There are things we can do, and I have about five of them here. First, I think we should really demand that the Secretary of Justice and the National Prosecution Service stop all John Doe cases. They can be easily identified, and they should be reviewed, and a cap should be put. If after 15 years, the government has not found the perpetrators, how do they think they can now identify them after so long? There must be some kind of cap put to that. Second, there is still no real, genuine congressional oversight of intelligence funds and intelligence operations. One of the main stumbling blocks there is the executive privilege, the case of Neri versus the Neri case, where the Supreme Court said that these kinds of matters, even things that I consider as covering up of a crime, are not subject, cannot be compelled to be divulged in Congress. So, well, from the legal community, we must demand that that doctrine be reversed. Third, I think we must, really now is the time to assert the right of access to information. Because obviously, the establishment, the military establishment, has they have databases about activists and human rights defenders and other people they consider to be enemies of the state. And I think we are entitled to some kind of, it's only fair that if our names are there, there must be some basis for it before they can just indiscriminately put people there. Related to that, we have now the writ of habeas data. That is a remedy allowed by the Supreme Court so that you can get information that would affect, let's say, your security and your life. But it hasn't been tested, and perhaps this is a good time to test that writ. Finally, there's much debate now about really the real value of the funds that are given by funding agencies for human rights. In particular, there has been some criticism about that funding going to the training of military and police. I have nothing against that, but I would say that if there will be funding that will be funneled to the training of military and police, then I would suggest to the funding agencies that it address two things. One, the fundamental belief that they have become ingrained in, that you know, these certain people who belong to a certain organization are evil and anything can be done to them. And second, I think a lot of the present training addresses the people on the field, but the real units that are involved in the very, very serious human rights violations are the intelligence units. And so if we want to reshape the conduct of the military, I think the intelligence units have to be held accountable. There must be ways by which they are more transparent and their activities can be monitored by civilian authorities. All right, I'll just address your questions. There are other things perhaps I could say, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. Please, I would be very willing to answer any of your questions. Thank you.